Did your breakfast this morning include alpha tocopherol? Perhaps there was some annatto in your toast, or annatto, I think it is, or red dye number 40 in your morning pastry. And it's likely that you were totally unaware that you were eating them. On today's edition of Please Explain, we're going to talk about these substances and others like them, what they are and why they're in our foods, whether or not they even need to be. Joining us now are Dr. Michael Jacobson, a microbiologist and the co-founder of the Center for Science and the Public Interest. He is the lead author of Six Arguments for a Greener Diet and publisher of the Nutrition Health Newsletter. And also with us is Dr. Marion Nessel, Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University. She's the author of many books about food and health, including Safe Food, The Politics of Food Safety, and What to Eat, which is published by North Point Press. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Michael, before we get to understanding more about some of the substances that are in our foods, how about starting with the most basic thing here? What is the definition of a food additive?
Well, there's a narrow legal definition that we probably shouldn't get into. In general, a food additive is anything that's added to basic food ingredients, you know, like vegetables and grains. And then companies add flavorings, colorings, preservatives, thickening agents, vitamins, all kinds of things. And all those things, in the average person's thinking, is a food additive.
Marion, has anyone ever counted how many food additives are being added to our foods?
Oh, I think people have tried to estimate it. It's in the thousands.
Can they be categorized in some way that's helpful to a layperson, categories besides just good or bad, perhaps?
Well, yeah, they could be categorized as sweeteners, flavoring agents, color agents, texturizers.
Something that gives you shelf life?
Yeah, just anything that extends the shelf life. I mean, we've always preserved foods with salt and sugar and vinegar and things like that. But these are usually when you think of additives, you think of chemical additives.
So salt and sugar and vinegar are food additives?
When they're added for the purpose of preserving.
But not for
flavoring.
Flavoring as well?
They're legally called, generally recognized as safe, even if they're not. But they salt and sugar, along with partially hydrogenated vegetable oil, are three common things, chemicals added to food. And those are actually three of the ones of greatest concern, notwithstanding the FDA's designation of generally recognized as safe.
And let's toss high fructose corn syrup into that category as well.
Sure, along with sugar.
Now, the ones that always scare me most are the ones with names that I feel like I can't pronounce, like carboxymethylcellulose or datum or cysteine or diacylglycerol or even scarier is when they're initials, EDTA.
Yeah. Well, I think the scariness of the term doesn't bear much reflection on the harmfulness of the substance or the safety of the substance. The ones you mentioned are pretty safe, whereas something like salt, which everybody is familiar with, is causing more harm than all the other additives put together.
Well, don't I keep on reading articles in the New York Times that suggest that salt is deleterious, and then it's actually safe, and then it's deleterious, and it's safe. So is the science complete on this yet? Or is it some people who are endangered by salt and other people need a lot of it?
The salt, there's more agreement in the medical community about the dangers of high-sodium diets than practically anything else. The World Health Organization, the Department of Agriculture, the American Heart Association, and the occasional reports that come out indicating that high-salt diets are safe or even good for you, when you look at the underlying study, it's usually flawed in some way, like inaccurate dietary records, or the study involved people who were suffering from some serious illnesses that totally overwhelm the effect of salt. But there's so much agreement on salt, the Food and Drug Administration, the Institute of Medicine, and just to put it in perspective, that there are estimates that if we could cut sodium consumption in half, that would save upwards of 100,000 lives a year due to reduced cardiovascular disease rates.
Now, Marion, we are more likely to hear about the dangers of sugar than we are of salt. Is sugar just as dangerous?
Well, it's dangerous in a different way. I mean, I'm not sure the word is dangerous. Sugar is delicious and wonderful in small quantities. But if you're pouring it on, especially in the form of sodas, which Michael Jacobson likes to call liquid candy, which I think is a great way of putting it, then you worry about the quantity because it's got calories and it may have some metabolic effects that don't work so well when it's consumed in large amounts.
But you mentioned earlier high fructose corn syrup. There's also high maltose corn syrup. Are they more harmful than straight sugar?
No, they're sugars. Any sugar that has fructose in it is going to lead to metabolic problems when consumed in large amounts.
What about honey? Isn't that also sugar?
It's got fructose, too.
But we consume a hundredth as much honey,
right?
You know, as sugar and high fructose corn syrup. Honey isn't a problem.
Yeah, 60 pounds a year of high fructose corn syrup and another 60 of sucrose. That's a lot.
And that leads to obesity. And soda pop is really the only food or beverage that's demonstrated to promote obesity, which is why soda pop is the focus of so much concern, especially in New York City, with the health department mounting anti-soda campaigns.
And losing.
Well, you know, interestingly, one can't visibly see it, but per capita consumption of sugary soft drinks has declined by almost 25% in the last 13 years. So there's some real progress, and the replacement in general has been water, bottled water. So I think there's some progress, and I'm sure there's progress in New York City, even though it's not immediately obvious.
My guests are Michael Jacobson and Marion Nessel. We're talking about food additives on today's Please Explain. And this is WNYC, WNYC.org. Our phone number is 212-433-9692 if you want to join the conversation. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Michael Pollan suggests that you should avoid any food that has an ingredient that you can't pronounce. Do you think that that's unreasonable of him?
I think he got it from me, actually, and it amuses me no end. It's one of the rules that I came up with, rules in quotation marks, because they're really slightly facetious. But never buy a product with more than 5 ingredients. Never buy a product with an ingredient you can't pronounce. Those are indications of the level of processing of the food product, and it's not bad as a first rule. There are many, many exceptions, but it's not bad as an approach.
Well, in some cases, it just is the name of a vitamin, and
right.
We don't realize that. But Anne left this question on our show page. Why is aspartame footnoted with
phenylalanine?
Said phenylketonuria. Whatever.
I see. Yeah.
It says, then it says contains phenylalanine. She says she drinks a lot of diet drinks, and this sounds like a warning to her.
It's a warning to people who have phenylketonuria not to drink it because they can't handle the amino acid that's in phenylalanine. I mean, they can't handle phenylalanine in their diet, so they have to restrict the amount of phenylalanine they eat. But if she had phenylketonuria, she would know it by now.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger concern with aspartame is that there are 2 studies from an independent Italian laboratory that found that aspartame caused cancer in laboratory animals. And it's quite controversial, but that's the big question mark over aspartame.
Another listener, Sergey in New Jersey, writes, I'm led to believe that there is no legal definition, but what actually are natural flavors that we find written on the ingredient section of food labels? And if there's no legal definition, what could they possibly be if they're not just natural flavor of the product itself?
Michael, why don't you do that one?
Well, natural flavorings can be anything under the sun. It can be, I think there's one natural flavoring that comes from the anal glands of beavers. Or it could be just a...
I'd like to know more about that one.
But only beavers.
It could. That's right. It could be a flavoring that occurs in obtained from apples or cherries. You know, something totally benign. You know, on my list of worries, that would be a low one. Except, I think it's important. We've been talking about this, you know, some of the risks: high fructose corn syrup and sugar and salt and aspartame. But it's, I think a big thing about food additives is that even perfectly safe additives, like, say, cherry flavoring and beta-carotene coloring, can be used with a flock of other safe ingredients, like flour and vegetable oil, to produce absolute junk foods, total junk, even if all the ingredients are safe. And the combination of artificial or natural colorings and flavorings is a powerful one to make a food appear to be really beautiful and delicious, tempting. The additives are all safe, but you end up with junk.
Well, you're making it sound like almost every food additive is bad. Aren't some of them, don't some of them, for example, prolong shelf life, which would be a good thing?
Yeah, but yes, absolutely. And vitamins and minerals can be are perfectly safe and good. They nutrify us. But vitamins and minerals are often used in junk foods. So a company can say, made with 10 vitamins and minerals, and your brain turns off. You think it's perfectly healthful, but if it's 40% sugar, it ain't.
And then you have things that strike me as odd, like calcium in orange juice. I understand calcium in dairy products, but does calcium belong in orange juice?
Oh, orange juice has calcium, but the added calcium is there to sell it. This is about marketing and has nothing to do with public health.
Well, the calcium for people who have osteoporosis and need extra calcium, it gives people another option.
I don't think it tastes good.
Well, that's a whole other issue. I always wonder about fat-free buttermilk, for example. I thought the whole idea of buttermilk was that it was it had butter in it, and that's fat, isn't it?
No, it's made from butter. It's what's left over after the butter's taken out.
Yeah, the curd or the whey or whatever. Yeah. But still, it seems like it's antithetical to make it fat-free, or sour cream that's fat-free.
Well, that one really doesn't make sense.
Well, except food technologists, you know, the companies look for marketing opportunities. If the media say, eat less fat or saturated fat, the food engineers get to work and try to figure out how can you make half and half or sour cream without the fat to make it more attractive to people. And they've been extraordinarily creative in the last 60 years, say, pretty much after World War II. And that's where this explosion of packaged, preserved, extruded, exploded foods has come.
They have to come up with chemicals that duplicate what's been extracted?
Well, certainly artificial colorings and flavorings. If you have artificial colorings and flavorings in a food, it should be a signal that some good, natural, and probably more expensive natural ingredients aren't there. You know, like a fruit drink as compared to real fruit juice.
Let's put one of our callers on the air. This is Tony from Queens. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. I can't believe how good your guests are. I'm already envisioning a horror movie with aspartame being owned by Rumsfeld, Coca-Cola, Buffett, smoking, everything that gentleman just said. You're so correct. Everything is in packaging, and I heard at the big council there, people, they said that the worst or the biggest thing America manufactures are all petroleum products.
Well, you're breaking up. I think you're getting calls or something. But is America the worst about this? Are people putting a lot of food additives in foods in other countries?
Oh, sure they are. China, for example, You look at all those candies that get imported here. They all have artificial colors in them.
Are they doing them for export, or are they doing them for their own domestic markets as well?
I suspect both.
I'm more patriotic than Marion. I would say America is number one when it comes to junk food and food additives. We have, you know, certainly compared to developing nations, obviously, but I think even Europe. And one area where there's a clear difference is with food dyes, chemicals like red dye number 40, yellow dye number 5, that are in thousands of our products. The British government told companies in Britain to stop using most of the food dyes, and the European Commission a couple of years ago passed a law that requires foods containing the most popular food dyes to bear a warning about hyperactivity in children.
Is that what they cause?
Yeah.
Why would a food dye cause hyperactivity?
Well, who knows? But there are plenty of studies, including one done by a Columbia psychiatry professor, who found that. And there are many, many studies. We've tried to get the FDA to take action. The FDA now agrees that food dyes do trigger hyperactivity in some children, but it won't ban the dyes or it won't require a warning label. Europe is clearly ahead of us in this regard, and it's hard to find foods with dyes over in Europe.
Well, who's most responsible? Is it the FDA or is it the Department of Agriculture?
The FDA has the first crack. The FDA approves food additives, and then the Department of Agriculture decides whether they are appropriate for meat and poultry products. So USDA might have stricter limits, but FDA is the place to go.
My guests are Michael Jacobson, a microbiologist, co-founder of the Center for Science and the Public Interest, and the lead author of 6 Arguments for a Greener Diet, publisher of the Nutrition Health Newsletter, and Dr. Marion Nessel, Paulette Goddard Professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University, and author of many books. We've talked to her about many of them over the years. The most recent, Safe Food, The Politics of Food Safety and What to Eat, which is published by North Point Press. We will continue our conversation, take a lot of your calls. Our number 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We're back with our Please Explain look at food additives with Dr. Mary Nessel and Dr. Michael Jacobson. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can also reach us online by going to our show page at WNYC.org and leaving a comment and a question. And we go now to Josh from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? My question is, I'm well aware of the dangers of salt and sugar and the effect that they have, but what scares me most is the unknown. As you were saying before, some of the additives that you could barely pronounce, that's what really scares me, and the effect that they have. For example, what scares me most is basically the fear of cancer. So is there any way of knowing what's really safe?
The Center for Science in the Public Interest has a website, and we also have an app on food additives. If you Google chemical cuisine, we rate the safety of practically all the common food additives in terms of are they safe, or are there questions, or do they pose a risk?
Okay, thank you for your call. And now Ellen from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I want to know about stevia. I use it as a sugar substitute. Tell me more about it.
Well, it's a natural substance extracted from a plant. It's been tested to some extent, and the tests on rats don't show any problem at all. There are other studies indicating that it causes mutations, and I think the government should have required the companies to do one further test, a long-term feeding study on mice. But they haven't required that, so now it's in the food supply. It's probably safe, is what I would say.
Marion, you have any thoughts?
Most additives are probably safe. You know, the difficulty with most of these things, stevia would be an exception because it's used in very large quantities as a substitute for sugar. But for the other additives that appear in the food supply in tiny, tiny amounts, parts per million or parts per billion, the testing to see whether they're safe or not is extremely difficult to do and typically involves much, much higher doses than would be consumed by anybody. So it's just really hard to know. And that's what I keep coming back to, is that these things are really not necessary.
Well, if it's such small quantities, are we practicing homeopathy in our food supply?
Right, exactly. Inoculating ourselves against the bad effects. But they're really not necessary. And I think the business about the colors, texturizers, and flavors that are made, that are put in there to make artificial ingredients look like real ingredients, why not eat the real ingredients? Yes, they're more expensive, but they taste a lot better.
Andy from Greensboro, North Carolina asks, what about sweeteners such as Sweet 'n Low and Splenda?
Oh, well, there we go again. Splenda also is used. I'm sorry, stevia is not used in large quantities. Splenda is used in large quantities, and the manufacturer says it's just like sugar, except it doesn't have the effect of sugars, but it's really not. It's an artificial sugar that has pieces added to it that make it not digestible. I don't like putting chemicals like that into my body. I'd much rather have foods that we've, you know, evolved to eat. I much prefer sugar.
Well, see, when we've looked at the studies, we didn't find any problems with sucralose. We did find problems with saccharin, which is in Sweet 'n Low. And question marks certainly about two other ones, aspartame and asulfame K, which is quite widely used but very rarely discussed. And, you know, if they're safe, you know, then I think it's up to the individual whether they – I don't eat them kind of on principle, but they do – if people are watching their calories, it does give them the pleasure of sweetness. You know, so it's –
except that there's no evidence that artificial sweeteners helps people control their weight.
There have been studies that indicate that people who drink diet sodas are no less likely to keep the weight down than people who don't.
No, they may even have more trouble, and there are all kinds of elaborate theories to explain why this might be. But one of my other rules is never eat anything artificial.
Scott in Brooklyn asks, is it true that food labeling is allowed to say 0% of trans fat and still contain trans fats?
Yes.
So why is that?
Up to half a gram per serving. In part because there are natural trans fats that can't be removed from food. If they're meat and dairy products, particularly, the hydrogenation that takes place in the intestine or in the gut or the stomachs of ruminants naturally hydrogenates, and those count as trans fat. So that would be one reason. The other is it's just sometimes really difficult to get it down to zero.
Let's take another call. This one is from Dana. Hi, Dana.
Hi. My question is about MSG and yeast. So there's all kinds of different yeasts and labels, and I've heard that MSG can be disguised as some form of yeast. And so what are the different kinds which are safe? And specifically, is the Tortola yeast in my son's chicken nuggets from Whole Foods, is that MSG?
I'm speechless. Michael?
Well, MSG is a purified chemical. There are
It's been used in Asian food since the beginnings of time.
Yeah,
as far as we know. Yeah.
In large amounts, MSG can cause headaches, but it seems to be pretty rare that it causes problems. Some companies.
So wait, are you saying it's been given a bad rap?
It has a worse rap than it deserves, that's mm-hmm. for sure. There's almost no research demonstrating that it causes headaches or more severe problems. Now, autolyzed yeast extract contains MSG and provides some of the same flavor enhancement without using the word MSG. If it's whole yeast, I don't know. It must have a little MSG in it, but I don't think it's a problem, and I wouldn't avoid a food for that reason.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, MSG is a sodium salt of a natural amino acid, and so it could be in anything that has protein in it.
We go now to Chris from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air. Peekskill, I'm sorry.
Hi.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, everyone. I'm just calling to ask about sodium nitrate. I see it appears in a lot of cured meats and deli meats, and if it's in fact a carcinogen, and furthermore, if it's advised to consume products with vitamin C when you digest it to negate the effects, if there are any effects.
Well, there are a couple of things about nitrate. Yes, it leads to the formation of carcinogens, and vitamin C greatly reduces that. So nitrite is a much smaller problem than it used to be in the 70s. I think it's a little problem. A bigger problem is that it's usually used in fatty junk foods. You know, we're talking hot dogs, salami, bacon, those kinds of foods that just aren't good for you. So if you see
bacon isn't good for you? You're ruining my life. That's the only thing that goes well with everything, including chocolate.
Yeah, you know, nitrite and artificial colors are good things to watch for, because if you see them on the ingredient label, it probably means that the food is pretty junky.
Now, what about when you see it in wine?
Well, sulfites are used in wine, and now there's a limit on how much sulfite. Sulfites can cause anaphylactic reactions. They can kill people, usually people with asthma. But since the FDA banned sulfites from fresh fruits and vegetables in the 1980s and limited the amount of sulfites in wine, I haven't heard of a single serious reaction. So I wouldn't worry about the sulfites in wine.
Debbie on Long Island says your guest's question that if color is added to food, that means something is missing, and she noticed color has been added to fresh Atlantic salmon and frozen. What's missing there? Why is the color added?
Well, what's missing there is the color that salmon normally would get from its normal diet.
So this is farm-raised salmon.
Yeah, it's farm-raised salmon that's colored with. I'm not sure what it's colored with. Maybe beta carotene. I think the coloring is safe, but it makes the food more appetizing.
Because it makes it look like wild salmon.
Looks closer to wild salmon.
Okay, let's go to Dr. Regina Schwartz. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First, I just want to congratulate your guests. They're my heroes for fighting in the trenches for safe food. We really need you in our corner. I have a question about so many of my patients are concerned about sweeteners and want to have healthy sweeteners. What's your thought about agave nectar?
I think it's a ripoff. It's very high priced, and it's mostly fructose.
I see.
And it's not the kind of sugar people ought to be eating. It's incredible that it's developed this aura of healthfulness. So if you want a sweetener, I would say a little bit of sugar or a little bit of honey. Sugar is not a poison, whether it's high fructose corn syrup or honey or whatever. It's the amount that we consumed, and the amounts most people consume are, you know, far, far greater than what the American Heart Association or Marion or I or the Department of Agriculture even recommends.
Okay.
I have one other question that involves the Center for Science and the Public Interest Journal, the Nutrition Newsletter.
Nutrition Action Health Letter.
Yes, yeah. I mean, that is a wonderful publication, and I would like to know how all the information in that newsletter could be more easily disseminated. Do you have that online? How can people subscribe to it? It has such current and relevant information.
Well, thank you, and I must assure the audience that you're not a shill. But I appreciate that. People can go to our website, cspi.net, and subscribe. We put some of the articles on the internet, but not all the articles. And I'll pass your compliment along to the staff.
Now, a listener writes, Dan in New Jersey, he says he's a cancer patient now being treated with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and NHL is one of those diseases that they don't know the cause for other than to say it has something to do with the environment. And he's wondering whether all these additives might play a role in that because they are part of the environment, aren't they?
The additives could, but... You know, searching for the cause of a particular person's cancer, with a few exceptions, is very challenging. You know, that person was probably exposed to 100,000 different chemicals from canned soups, the BPA liner, to aspartame, to air pollutants. There's no way to know, and it could just be natural. You know, his body was prone to it, and it happened.
Helen, you're on the air.
Yes. I'd like to ask about a shampoo. I've been hearing for many years that I'm looking at the container now. It says sodium lauryl sulfate and sodium lauryl sulfate, and I've heard that these are very harmful. Is that so?
Do we know, and does it matter if you don't eat the stuff?
I don't think it matters at all. I wouldn't worry about that.
They're part of soap, and the soaping action and the cleaning action, I think it's important not to eat them. But most people don't like the taste of shampoo.
Yeah, I don't like it. Other listeners have asked about all of the salt that we're seeing in things like chicken breasts these days, prepared chicken breasts. You're suggesting don't buy them. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, thank you so much for being with us on today's Please Explain, Dr. Marion Nessel and Dr. Michael Jacobson. It's been quite fascinating, and I guess the message that you're sending out is, whenever possible, eat the natural food.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.